woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick us up on our podcast there. Being brought to you by Conquest Scents out of Davison, Michigan. Find their great products like the Heat Seeker, the Scrape Maker, and of course the VS1 and the Evercalm Scents in a Stick, just to name a few things. Links on our website again at wildmichiganradio.com. And brought to you by our newest member of the family, Not Just Guns, located at Cedar and 127 in Mason. And they have a wonderful, I was in there the other day talking to Mike Green, the owner of the place. A absolutely huge selection of not only firearms, but suppressors, ammunition, and all the great stuff that goes along with the shooting sports. Again, by all means, stop by, see Mike, tell him you heard it on Wild Michigan, and check out their Wednesday night auctions. All the details at notjustguns.com. And the Wednesday night auctions are just a mad time for gun purchasing. You can find that hard-to-find item and pay what you want, basically. So make sure you check them out as well. Getting very close to the turkey season here in Michigan. Leftover licenses went on sale on Monday. And this has become, and I've said it publicly, and I mean it, that this has become my favorite season of the year. Absolutely, bar none. I mean, turkey hunting to me has taken the place of whitetail hunting, of up and game, of you know, pheasant, things like that. I just love turkey hunting, and it's not always about being behind the gun. Sometimes it's more about being behind the call for someone else, and we talked to Al Stewart about that last week. But, you know, maybe this year I'll take a different approach. Maybe this year I'll take my bow out, which I haven't touched in quite a while, and that's something I want to talk with our good friend Tom Nelson, the American Archer, about. Tom, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Duran. Thank you for having me on today.
Absolutely, man. It's funny because every time about this year, we're talking about turkey hunting, we're talking about bow hunting, and because things are starting to warm up, you know, maybe we don't shoot that 3D league indoors and our bow's been sitting for a while. What are some of the things we need to look at, whether it's been out in the barn or in the house? I mean, I'm sure that makes a big difference to the two.
Yeah, hopefully it's not out in the barn. You just never know what's going to happen out there. But, you know, a lot of us have a pole barn with a, you know, man cave in it. You might have your bows or whatever, and other people throw them under their bed or in a closet and such. But, yeah, now is a great time. I mean, you hunted with it last fall. It's been sitting around this winter. To pull it out, and before you get out there and start shooting in the backyard or head to the archery club, take a good look at your bow. Matter of fact, if you're kind of a novice, take it to a pro shop. Have them look at it. See if the string's in good condition, if the cables, you know, just give it the quick once-over. And no better time to do it than right now. But have it looked at, because if it needs a new string or needs new cables or just some little thing changed on it, now is the time to do it. Don't wait until bow season rolls around. Do it now. Practice with the new setup all summer, and you'll be ready to go.
You know, it's kind of like what we talk about with the old, you know, with sighting in our firearms. Don't wait till, like, November 14th to sight in, because you'll be sorely disappointed a lot of times, and with a bow especially, because there are so many working parts, and you have to put those in motion, that it could be very disappointing.
Oh, absolutely, Duran. And, you know, one thing that, you know, I hear a lot of in hunting camps or even, you know, at sports shows and such, or running into my buddies, people will say, you know, I use this X brand rest, but I think I'm going to change it. Or I use this particular sight, but during hunting season last year, I found that this didn't work so well, or a new tree stand. You know, remember that. Keep that thought in your head and change that equipment now. I mean, don't wait until September or the week before bow season to think you're going to throw a new sight on or a new arrow rest or get a new set of arrows or broadheads for that matter. That's the stuff you want to take care of now and practice all spring and summer with that new equipment. So when bow season rolls around, you're comfortable with it and you're acclimated to this new gear and you're ready to go.
Speaking with Tom Nelson here on Wild Michigan, Tom, you know, you made a point that probably didn't resonate with some people, but about switching broadheads. If you're going from a mechanical to a fixed blade broadhead, there may be some planing involved, even though, I mean, broadheads have come a long way since way back when, but there's going to be some different aerodynamics involved when it comes to switching broadheads from mechanical to a fixed blade or vice versa.
Absolutely, and that's a very good point to bring up, Duran. You know, anytime you make a little adjustment like that, you know, a broadhead's like a paper airplane at times when you throw it, you know, it goes wherever it wants sometimes. And if you change broadheads, they maybe are going to shoot an inch or two to the left or high right or something. But, you know, you just never know. Hopefully, you know, in the best case scenario, your bow's tuned perfect. Everything's going to work well as far as with the arrows. Your broadheads will hit in the same place as your practice heads. But oftentimes, more often than we care to know, they'll fly a little bit different. And albeit it might only be a couple of inches, that can make the difference between a fatal hit and a wound. So if you are going to change broadheads, do it now. And as you stated, practice with them before season rolls around, or turkey season in this case, you know, it's right around the corner. If you're going to switch to one or the other, shoot them before you hunt with them.
Now, Tom Nelson is our guest here. You can find him on the Outdoor Channel. The American Archer is the TV show that you've been with 23, 24 years now.
Yeah, 23. That's good guess, Duran. Yes, sir.
Good Lord. It's been a little while. And it was like still, I mean, like at 10 when we first met. So, you know, we've been doing this show here for quite some time, and we're very happy to have you on. And, you know, and I had mentioned to you that I went down to the Lansing Outdoor Show here recently and had the opportunity to speak to Fred Eichler, which, I mean, a great hunter, really he is, a great predator hunter and caller. And, you know, I got to watch him call predators there just briefly. I mean, there was one guy down the aisle calling, and then Fred would call back. I'm like, man, this was a contest. Fred's kind of got this hands down. I don't know what the other guy's doing, but I know exactly what he's doing. But I had made mention of, you know, because he's been on the show here, about everybody that we have learned from on this show, from all of our guests in one way or another. And I mentioned how, you know, prior to this show, I'd never picked up a bow. And then I meet Tom Nelson, and I'm talking on the phone. We're doing all this other stuff. And because of this show, I've been so blessed with so much success from who we've met and who we've learned. And this is why, even though we've been successful, it's still good to have you back on, because there's something else I might learn. And, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about is, since we've not had a bow sponsor and had a bow company with us for a number of years, I have an old bow that I really, really loved, and I'm really thinking about picking that back up. And that's why I ask you about, you know, what I should look for with this when I, you know, take it out of the case for the first time in a number of years.
Yes. And that's true, especially if that bow's been sitting around for a few years, that's all the more reason to take it in. Just have a, you know, get a quick once over, you know, and any good bow smith will be able to look at, you know, bow tech will say, geez, this is looking, you know, this looks good. Or, hey, Duran, a little wear here on your string, I'd replace it now. Or this rest is antiquated. Let's do a little, you know, modernization to it. So, yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, I still think I've got pretty much decent equipment on them. I mean, it's only about 5 years old, but at the same time, I want to make sure it's okay to draw back, because last thing I want is for that first pullback to end up in a malfunction of any kind.
Oh, for sure. And luckily, though, today, the equipment we have, or even 5 years, 10 years ago, is so far advanced over what we used 20, 30 years ago. I mean, your strings and cables last longer. Your equipment, as far as sights and arrow rests, are much more bulletproof than they were back then. So my guess will be that your gear is already, your archery tackle is already to go when you pull that bow out. But that being said, I still would have it looked at.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson is our guest here. We're going to talk a little bit about turkey hunting with a bow, and maybe find out if there's anything new we could learn about equipment-wise to take into the woods with us when we're hunting that Tom come spring here. Ah, hell, what am I saying? It is spring, finally, here in Michigan. We've had four winters. It's about time we get one spring. I'm Duran Martinez. You're listening to us on the Michigan Talk Network, being brought to you by Conquest Sense, conquestsense.com, and a link is directly on the front page of our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Stay.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason, Michigan. The name is exactly what they say. They are guns, yes, but they're not just guns. They have suppressors, a great line of suppressors now that we can use them. You know what? Getting kids outdoors and teaching them about shooting doesn't have to involve all the loud noises and stuff. I mean, look, things are different nowadays. Suppressors, legal. Great selection at notjustguns.com. And, of course, you know, some of our American heroes that suffer from PTSD that want to get back out in the outdoors, these suppressors are going to be a great way to go for them as well. Check them out online, notjustguns.com. And don't forget their Wednesday night auctions. And we are back right now with the American archer, Tom Nelson, here on Wild Michigan. Tom, I want to talk a little bit about turkey hunting with a bow. I tried it once when I very first started turkey hunting. Okay, I got one shot off, and it was, I'll say it wasn't a good shot, and I'll tell you why. Because sometimes when we are in a blind, the actual distance of a bird to, you know, what it looks like from the blind is very different. Why is that? Why do we have such a problem, you know, gauging actual distance when we're in that blind?
I think a big part of it, Duran, is first of all, you're in such a small enclosed area, and you're looking through usually when you're turkey hunting, you have most of the windows closed, but the shooting window, because they can see so well, and you're shooting through almost like a tunnel. And that tunnel effect, that you're looking from the dark out into the light and then through that small opening, just seems to throw you off. And I'll be honest with you, I always carry a rangefinder with me when I'm sitting in there. Just because of that reason. And the second thing I always do is I put my decoy 5 yards from my blind. I mean, they're right in front of my pop-up blind, mm-hmm. really close. And that way I know it's all first pin action on my sight if something comes in there. Because sometimes they'll hang up out there at 20 yards and such, but by having them so close, it usually lures them in there. But you're right, yeah, it gives you a different perspective as far as you know viewing when you're looking through that, and like I said, that almost like a tunnel effect, which I think throws off that ability to judge distance versus if you were just standing out in the open. And that's a fact. I've heard that same statement from others.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, you know, I put my decoy out, you know, like 10 yards or whatever. I'll get back in the blind. I'm like, why does that look so far? I counted it off. It's really not that far, and just it really throws you off. And here's my next question. I mean, look, I know turkeys have an amazing binocular vision, and the radius is it's like 280 degrees radius or something ridiculous.
Yep,
it's almost
correct.
Literally a full circle. Can we do this without a blind on the ground? I mean, I know it's hard, but is it possible?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is possible, albeit extremely difficult. The very first turkey I took with a bow was back in the old days when there were none of these pop-up blinds available. I mean, I'm trying to think how long, I hate to age myself, but it was probably 30 years ago. And I was just fortunate the turkey went behind a tree. I drew back and shot him. But that was after some other miserable failures. And after that year, I built my own blind, to be honest with you. But it can be done. And this year, Duran, that's my goal, is to once again, I was going to do it last year, but I was restricted as far as the amount of days I could actually devote to turkey hunting, so I utilized my blind, ended up taking a nice bird with my bow. But this year, I said I'm going to just try very, very hard to take a bird just by running and gunning as if you were using a gun, but with my bow, and try it again. I just want to add a little more bit of a challenge to it.
Now, a lot of people, Tom Nelson is our guest here on Wild Michigan. He is the host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel. Tom, a lot of people, you know, there are different ways to hunt turkey with a bow. I mean, you know, people use like a fixed broadhead. They use a mechanical. Some even use these guillotine blades, which, I mean, it's like a 4-inch wide blade times two that you're hoping to lop the head off of this bird with these things.
That's correct.
Have you ever used these with any success?
I actually had some, but I never actually took them afield. And the reason being is you basically have to recite your whole bow in for this arrow setup. It shoots completely different. It's just it's a weird thing. And I personally didn't want to have to recalibrate everything, recite in, and retune my bow just to go hunting turkeys. And so I haven't. But that being said, I have some friends that are avid turkey hunters that do utilize them and have had extremely good success. There's also a lot of individuals now that are taking these expandable broadheads, the large cutting diameter expandables, and they're shooting them. They're opening up the blades before they shoot when they knock their arrow, just to give them a large size broadhead, and are doing the same. Now, me, I don't know if I want to take a risk of just aiming at the head. Now, you know, it's either a dead bird or a miss, but I still just soon, you know, pick that spot on their body, which you need to pay attention to when you're doing that, because the kill area is about the size of your fist, closed fist on a turkey. But I'm still one of those guys that find the drumstick, bring my pen up, and shoot them in the body there, and it seems to be foolproof so far.
Let's talk about the three places that I know. You have that straight-on shot just below the head, where the breast area where the beard comes down. You have that side shot where their wing is like armor.
Yes, sir.
And then you have what we call the Texas heart shot.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. Those are three effective shots on a turkey.
Now, for those who don't know what a Texas heart shot is, Tom, talk about the positioning of a strutting Tom and why that bullseye might be a good place to hit it.
You know, and Duran, and I've shot more than a few turkeys using that as an aiming point, you know, when they're fanned out and you're looking at them from the rear end there, and there is that aiming spot, and it crushes them. I mean, if you hit them there, they're down and flopping. I mean, it's a great shot. And the same can be said, as you mentioned, of a face-on shot when you're aiming at that beard, basically, for lack of a better aiming spot. But that head-on like that, again, it just drops them. And I prefer either one of those shots, personally, than the broadside trying to pick a spot on the wing. Because, like, as you said, depending, that it's unbelievable how tough shooting through. You wouldn't think so, but you know, shooting through a turkey's feathers and inside like that, and there's a lot of margin for error.
There is. I mean, with their wings, I mean, they're like armor. I mean, they really are. I don't care what anybody says. I've had turkey wings from birds of my own, and they're just like a rock, like pounding on a table. But when you have that back end shot, that posterior shot, I mean, you're directly connecting to vitals from that area.
Yes. Yes, and there's not a lot of resistance there as far as if you place an arrow there. It usually goes right on through or right up and does a ton of damage. I've never shot one there that didn't basically, like I said, do the crappie flop and where you can just walk out and retrieve them. So it really does a lot of damage.
Well, you know, there again, you have three places that you know now if you're going to take your bow out that will work. But the front on and the right to the back shot are going to be your best. Tom Nelson, as always, man, appreciate you joining us. Find him online. You can find The American Archer on Facebook and Instagram and all those other great places. And if you see Tom in Grand Ledge, Michigan, man, just make sure you say hi. Tom, thank you, brother.
Thank you, Duran. Again, always a pleasure being on the show.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson, our guest here, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. And we'll speak with Doug Roberts, the Deer Professor, coming up next on Wild Michigan.
Hey, this is Nick Munt, the Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Sense out of Davison, Michigan, the new Heat Seeker, the new Scrape Maker, and of course, VS1, Evercom, all fine products brought to you by this gentleman and his family, talking about Doug Roberts, the Deer Professor, joining us. Doug, how are you, sir?
I am doing good, Duran. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man, because we're officially like into spring now. Well, I mean, we've made it on the calendar. There's no denying that we have spring. We had kind of a late winter, kind of a hard late winter, and some odd things have been popping up. Odd in my book. You're a guy that lives around deer 24/7, but my good friend Dave was out driving the other day, got run into by a buck, hit him right in the side of the truck, and we knew it was a buck because it literally knocked the antlers off this truck, or off this deer, in the third week of March.
I'll tell you, it has been a weird winter. The way it came in, you know, it was a great cool fall going into winter. The winter wasn't real hard. So what's happened is a lot of these bucks stayed in good condition later into the year. And then when the really rough winter hit, they were able to kind of withstand it a little bit better. And also there's a lot more food sources out there. Corn prices were down, soybean prices. So a lot of the farmers left some of these fields standing longer than they normally would. And so the deer had more food sources available to him, even though the winter turned really harsh. So we're actually seeing antlers staying on longer because the testosterone levels in those deer have stayed up higher for a longer period of time. It's really been interesting to see the transition. So we still have one yearling buck here on the farm. He's walking around with a full set of antlers on, and I'm just can't figure it out. But they'll drop when the timing's right.
Absolutely. He's like, ladies, my eyes are up here.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, but he literally still has his antlers on. That's hilarious.
But again, when they drop, what will happen? And a lot of hunters are going to ask this question, well, does that mean, yes, they have a shorter growing season for antler, but they seem to grow faster and they all seem to catch up. Every time I've had a buck that's held antlers longer in the season, it just seems to grow faster and better because the environment is good for that. So it's not going to restrict necessarily antler growth. You'll still see the great antlers that will grow if you have a good summer.
Now, the other thing, Doug Roberts is our guest here. The other thing my wife and I have noticed, I mean, we are seeing a lot of deer, probably more around this time of year than we ever would see in the daytime and during light hours. But the one thing that comes out of her mouth is they all look so small, that we have so many smaller deer, which appear to be, last year's fawns out. And believe me, I'm shocked to see that many small deer as well.
What? Graham, what we found here in Michigan, we've got to understand we have an extremely young deer herd. Overall, our deer herd basically is made up of fawns, 1.5-year-olds, and 2-year-olds. Now, don't get me wrong, every hunter that's listening to us right now is going to say, yeah, but I know I got a 4 or 5-year-old doe. You do. But if you literally look at the state overall, our deer herd is much younger than, let's say, for example, Illinois or Ohio's or mm-hmm. Kansas, because we've harvested all of them at such a younger age. We haven't allowed the maturity to get into the deer herd in Michigan. So that's why you're seeing a lot of smaller bodied deer overall.
Yeah, it was kind of strange, and I didn't know if we had just another perfect storm when I came to the breeding season last year, or, you know, if people, you know, we're just seeing people still harvesting younger deer. And I'm not trying to get anybody up in arms about how they harvest a deer. Okay, that's not what this question was leading to. It was just a question of we're seeing a lot smaller, a lot younger deer out there on a very consistent basis is all.
Yeah, and last year was a good year for fawning. Again, you got pockets of predator problems, but overall, the food and the nutrition was available. The weather conditions, you know, we talked about this before, the weather conditions last year from when fawns were dropping all the way through summer, we really had a good summer. There wasn't any severe drought, long periods of drought. So the food sources were there, the water sources were there. We did have a good year, but overall, we just have a young deer herd in Michigan. And until we start letting them get some age on them and get some body size on them, you're just going to see that staying very consistent.
And I think, too, Doug, what I'm seeing is some of the routes that my wife and I travel in, may have been some of that EHD zone that we've had. We had major die-offs of big bucks or bucks in general that year a couple of years ago. And that may be just kind of rebounding from that time.
Absolutely. If you're going through that area, that's absolutely what you're seeing in that area. You know, up north, I know I've talked to some people, and they have pockets of very mature deer. But if you look at those, you're going through the APR zones. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. You see, you know, EHD zones, and then you see APR zones. There's a drastic difference in the age structure within those areas, for sure. You know, it's interesting you bring up EHD. The deer farming industry has now got a vaccine that can be given to deer, and they don't die from EHD.
Really?
They may get sick, but literally, it just came up available for sale actually a week or so ago. But it's a vaccine for EHD that we can give to deer, and actually, like we would with any other type of vaccine for people. We've got them working on trying to get that vaccine into a feed formula. If we can get it into a feed formula, you know what that means. The hunters now could feed that feed formula and vaccinate the wild deer herd. So you may see sick ones, but they're not going to get so sick they drop over dead. So amazing progress. They're a huge leap in the regards for EHD. So,
you know, this is where I'm going to applaud the deer farming industry. And I know frankly, I don't care if I get any pushback from this, but you guys, because this is your livelihood, are spending your own money to find these vaccinations, to find these cures, to find these root problems that could affect the herd that you are trying to build and grow and use in your industry, as where, you know, other agencies are not doing the same thing. They're just kind of not taking that initiative. I understand funding's an issue, but it's good to see you guys doing this. And I know it's your livelihood.
We have to, you know, and literally it's been millions and millions and millions of dollars of private funding of deer farmers and their associations that are trying to find. But we want to find it to save all deer. It's not just the deer farming.
Sure.
Deer. It's we want to fix EHD and CWD and the wild deer herds. We're all deer hunters.
Absolutely.
And we absolutely love the animal. But yeah, when you look, and I have millions of dollars tied up onto this farm, and you know, I've got, 14, 15 different families relying on these deer to give them an income, I want to fix every disease I possibly can, and I'm going to spend a lot of money into the research, as well as all these other farms. So we need the agencies and the states to get on board. Michigan, this past year, when you add up what they spent on testing CWD in Michigan, mm-hmm. ended up being $25,000 per positive found.
Wow.
That's a lot of money to find a positive deer. Yeah.
Well, that said,
again, we have to help them find a different avenue. We have to work together and help find a different avenue of how do we combat CWD, because we can't afford to spend $25,000 per positive animal.
Sure.
Now, again, not, you know, but that's what it come out to for the amount we spent, the amount of positive we found, and it averaged out to $25,000 a deer. That's all just finding it. That's not fixing
right.
a problem. That was just finding it.
All right. Hang on, Doug. We're going to talk more about that and how we maybe can help a little bit with maybe food plots and maybe doing things like that and keep an eye on the herd throughout the course of the year here on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pull tight.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez here in the studios. Show being brought to you by Not Just Guns in Mason, Michigan, on Cedar at 127. If you're looking for the new 450 Bushmaster, They've got them. They've got suppressors. They've got handguns. They've got all the accessories. And, of course, their Wednesday night auctions, notjustguns.com. Check them out. Just amazing stuff, man. I was in there the other day to talk to Mike, and I was blown away by what seemingly looks like a small shop is loaded. And I mean loaded with great firearms, great deals, and the things you want. And they are not that place that looks at you like, what are you doing here? No, this is a very friendly, buyer-friendly environment that wants to help you find what you need, not what they want to sell you. Back to Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense here, one of our great sponsors on the show. Doug, let's talk about where we kind of left off. About how you guys in the industry, you know, we know that you have the Conquest Farms, that you are breeding trophy bucks. You have your own herd that you use for products for VS1, for the Evercalm and the other great products that you guys are using. And the CWD issue is very big for you because the first time we saw it was in Kent County here in Michigan, where someone of lesser standards, much lesser standards, was caught that had CWD, and that same night tried to sneak deer out of the farm. Okay, he wasn't being watched. I don't know, but believe me, I knew before he did that he was getting watched. So, yep. but this is something you guys take very seriously, and your research into CWD. Is kind of nonstop as well. You guys are taking those steps farther than a lot of other places are right now.
Well, we have. Duran, the deer farming industry in Michigan is very unique. We're very proactive in what we've looked at. And we've had to clean house. We used to be almost 900 licensed facilities. We're down to just shy of 400 now. But the ones we have are very serious about it. They're looked at as businesses. If you look back at the TB, when tuberculosis hit, and we really wondered, what was it, our industry? Do we have the problem? Are we spreading it to the wild, or is wild to us? We didn't know. So as an industry, we did a mandatory whole herd test of the entire industry. Every farm, every ranch had to test. And what we found was, yeah, we don't have the problem. But I said, so not to get the problem, we created an accreditation program where everyone has to TB test X amount of animals every so often over a period of time. So if it does show up, we can eliminate it immediately. So it's something we put on ourselves. We've done the same thing with CWD. When CWD came in 2004, we looked and said, okay, we have to create a testing program, and it now is becoming mandatory. We've asked the government to go into the law and say, make this mandatory that anyone with a licensed facility has to be in this certification program and has to test the heads for CWD, because if it's there, we want to find it and eliminate it. So our industry has been very proactive because we have so much money invested, and it's the only way we're going to find the cure or a way of stopping CWD is by doing this testing and doing the research and spending the money. So we need the agencies in the states to step up on board financially to help work with us and speed up the process.
You know, it's one thing where, you know, you have to cut through government red tape to get the testing you need, but to have, you know, direct access, like this is my industry, this is my money, there's no bureaucracy involved.
No, there's not. It's moving quick. But here's what's interesting in Michigan. Dr. Haley, which is one of the leading researchers, is now finding genetic resistant markers in whitetail deer that these deer seem to be resistant from getting CWD or catching it. And it was done in the sheep and the scrapies. Scrapies was found in sheep, and that's what's literally created all of this mess, was sheep. But the sheep industry literally found genetic markers of resistance, and they bred scrapies right out of existence. As of today, scrapies does not exist in the U.S. because they only breed genetically resistant sheep. Mm-hmm. We're finding, it looks like we can do that same thing in the white-tailed deer. So if we can find those genetic resistance in Michigan in the wild deer, and we can let them breed and multiply at a faster rate than the ones that are susceptible, and we can eliminate those, we can literally, I think, over time, breed out CWD in the state of Michigan. And all it takes is just a hair sample sent into a lab, which happens to be right here in Michigan. It's that simple. If 100 wanted to know, take a hair sample, send it into the lab. I think it's $20 or $25, and he would know if he has genetic resistant markers in the area he's hunting. It's really easy to do, and it really would make a difference moving down the road.
Is Doug Roberts is our guest here from Conquest Sense. Doug, is there a website? Has there been information compiled that we as hunters in Michigan can go and get this information that you guys have collected, or that other people, non-governmental, have compiled that we can look at and maybe learn from?
Yep, there is. There's a new website that's been created. It's called truthaboutcwd.com. And if you go there, it's all the latest research. All the research has been done, but all the latest research, the rebuttals, the questions. But it's a place that every hunter and every person in across the country, but Michigan, can go to and educate themselves on what's being done to stop and fix CWD. Truthaboutcwd.com.
Doug Roberts is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Doug, let's talk a little bit about food plots as we are going to start getting into the growing season here in Michigan. We have the stop now. We have the ban on baiting and feeding, but not food plots. Food plots are essential for not only deer, but for everything else in general. I mean, how much space do we really need, first of all, for a food plot?
You know, Duran, in regards to CWD, I don't think it's really going to matter.
No.
Because the size has nothing to do with it. Because if you have in an infected environment, whether it's 100 by 100 square foot area or whether it's the neighbor's full cornfield or alfalfa field, if the prions are in the ground, what we have found through the research is these plants are pulling those prions up out of the soil and putting it into the edible parts of the plant. We're not going to stop that. So I think what you have to look at is look at the number of deer you have in your area, and can you have a food plot or food plots, multiple ones, large enough that you can keep them deer spread out in the vegetation in good shape, where they have more of a selection, I think, is a bigger key than size alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I've heard that before from, you know, agronomists that we had on the show, that it's all about, you know, the size of not the size of the salad bar, but the contents.
Exactly. It's the quality of the contents. The one thing that we're also looking into, our industry is looking into, and it's in its very infant stages, but if you look at where farmers have been irrigating and farmers have been using the insecticide Roundup, okay, it's a weed killer for years. It's very good. Now we have Roundup Ready Seed. If you look at that and you lay that over the U.S., even Michigan, and you overlay the CWD hot zone, mm-hmm. It's a perfect match.
Huh.
So what we're starting to wonder is Roundup, this insect, you know, this herbicide, part of the problem? Is it changing something in the deer genetically that they're more susceptible to getting CWD? So I would honestly say, you know, kind of look for those things. Maybe use some of the alternative to kill stuff off and get rid of some of that stuff in the soil. You know, farmers can't stop using because we got to feed more people every year.
Sure.
With less farmers. But the point is we're creating some of these chemicals that we now know are causing cancer in people.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they not be causing issues in the animals in the wild that are eating those plants and that vegetation as well? So I would try to choose wisely in what ingredients you put into your food plot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hay fields, they told me, man, do this Roundup Ready. And I said, absolutely not. I stay with the natural types of seeds, and yep, I may get weeds in there, but I'll use some other form of recultivating it.
Sure.
So I would say that's where I would lead more towards that aspect.
All right, Doug Roberts joining us here on Wild Michigan. Doug, as always, man, I greatly appreciate everything you share with us. Again, the website you want to look for is truthaboutcwd.com. We'll have a link on our website for wildmichiganradio.com. And Alex, I think we're about close to the end of this segment. So again, Doug, as always, man, I'll keep you off air for a minute, but I appreciate you as always, and appreciate everybody listening here to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
No, I appreciate you having me on, Duran. It's always fun.